ESPN College Football Podcast.
I can guarantee you that no college football podcast has started out with barking all year long. Let's go! It's the Georgia Takeover. I'm Elle Duncan. I'm joined by the incomparable, my favorite Georgia Bulldog, David Pollack. At least my favorite Georgia Bulldog of yesteryear, because currently my favorite Georgia Bulldog, Nakobe Dean, the Nakobe Dean, also joining us on the podcast as, yes, we continue to spread Georgia propaganda. A couple things I want to mention really quickly off the top. Can you listen to First Take, Her Take podcast, please? Mostly because in a very self-serving way, I'm on it, along with Charlie Arnold and Kimberly A. Martin. We do all kinds of talking about football and sports related things, but also our lives, which at many times are an absolute SHIT show. And remember to watch NBA Today, hosted by Malika Andrews, for exclusive content Monday through Friday, 3 Eastern, noon Pacific. You can get caught up with all the latest from around the NBA. It's also on the ESPN app, one tap. And remember that you can listen to NBA Today wherever you get your podcasts. It's always been great to be a Georgia Bulldog, but man, it's great to be a Georgia Bulldog right now. David, how do you feel?
I just love that. I mean, your Sports Center with Kev was the most astonishing, awesome thing I've seen. I had to text you after that because you're like, Alabama fans, miss me in my mentions. I can't act like I've been there before because I haven't. So shut your mouth.
It
was beautiful. Quiet. Yeah, it was beautiful. No, it's crazy. It keeps coming on. It was on SEC Network, I think, last night. Might have watched it again. But I just think, you know, we grew up in Georgia, and all we've known really is a lot of disappointment and a lot of close calls. And I played on teams with close calls. And so it's fun. We were in Bible study this morning with a bunch of my group of dudes, and we were talking, and then all of a sudden, you know, Georgia got brought up, and we're like, you know what? We're not the team that can't close it anymore. Like, it still comes up. So there's still so much pride, and it's still almost like, oh my gosh, wait a minute, it happened. But I don't know how to describe it besides when Ringo got that interception and I walked by behind the bench, I literally saw hundreds of grown men crying. That's how much it meant to a group of people. It was crazy.
I want to ask you that though, David, because you mentioned it, right? Like a part of not only just being a Georgia football fan, but just someone from Georgia who has experienced the heartbreak, especially over the last 15 years or so of Georgia sports fandom. And the entire stadium at Lucas Oil is pretty much filled with Georgia fans, right? Like we all had this sense that if it was going to happen, it was going to happen that night. But for most of the game, there was a lot of like uneasiness, like, oh my God, is this going to happen to us again after the Stetson Bennett fumble? You know, I'm like, I'm down on the suite on the floor right behind the end zone. And we're looking at like everyone else and all the suites around us. And everyone's sort of like, oh no, like, is this going to happen? At what point in that game did you actually feel, because you have such an intimate knowledge of this team, you are always there. At what point did you feel like, oh, this is going to happen. No matter what is happening right now, this is going to finally happen for Georgia. Was there a point?
The Ringo pick did that for me. Like, right? That was like, holy cow. Like that's the nail in the coffin. You're like, oh my God. It feels like, remember Glory Road when he looks to his coach and they're like, I'm a national champion. Like it was that kind of that moment. But you know, I'm a big reverse psychology guy. You don't really want to stand next to me. Like, so me and Ben Watson and Reese Davis are on the sidelines and I'm like, wait a minute. You know, what's the most Georgia thing we could do to lose this? Like,
correct.
So we're just I'm coming up with scenarios and I'm like, no, that wouldn't hurt enough. Like it has to hurt like really bad.
Yeah.
Like you have to stick the wound in, twist it, and then pull it out and watch us bleed out. Like,
yes.
You know, so I was just sitting over on the sideline coming up with all kinds of excuses and all kinds of things that were going to happen and kind of not believing it. But when Ringo caught that pick, it was like, oh my God, like it just happened. Like, and so I think that was the moment. That was the moment where it's because I won't lie to you. Like, and my daughter was interesting. So when Stetson fumbled, you know,
right.
Georgia fans, by the way, felt exactly like you just described. Here we go again, 100%, because they started throwing beer cans. A bunch of fans got booted out for being idiots and didn't get to watch the best part of the whole game because they were throwing things. And my daughter literally looks at my wife and was like, "What's wrong with everybody? Why are they?" flipping people off, and she's 11. She's like, why are they flipping people off? Why is people, why are people throwing things? Like, they're doing the best. They're trying to, you know, why can't, she said, why can't the world be sunshine and rainbows? And, and my wife was like, listen, that's the way it is. She was like, but we've also dealt with a lot of frustration and a lot of losses and a lot of close calls. So people are very, you know, on the edge and upset. But I think the Ringo pick, you know, kind of sealed the deal. And have you seen the 25 different angles from the Ringo pick that in the stadium? That was so cool because you could touch everybody that was there and you could see, again, grown people crying, the people being like, oh my God, like this has actually happened.
So, oh God, David, you sound exactly like, that's what's so funny with like Georgia fans. I really do feel like we all sort of, we are a monolith in that we always expect the worst. So after that Bowers touchdown, right? We're up by 8 with like 3 and some change. And I'm like, not feeling confident, right? Cause there's still 3 and some change. Right. And in my head, I'm like, okay. So at the worst, they can score a touchdown. They'll get the 2-point conversion and they'll tie it. And then maybe there'll be like a little bit of time for us to just get into field goal range or something like that. So then they start moving down the field. Right. And I'm like, oh God. And I start relaying it too. I'm like, no, oh God. So they're going to tie it up, but then we're going to like fumble the ball or we're going to fumble the kickoff or we're going to do something and they're going to get the ball back. And then that's how it's going to, and it was devastating. And so when Ringo picked that off, there was like a group of people around me and I just kept saying to myself, does that mean it's over? Does that mean it's over? And they're like, Elle, sweetie, it's super over, honey. There's like less than a minute left. Look how much we're up. I'm like, but is it like over? Because I couldn't possibly believe that not only we could do it in a way that like the poetry of like starting our season with a pick six against Clemson and then finishing it in that way, it just didn't seem like those kinds of things happened for us. And I have to be honest with you, David, over the last 9 days, even when I was standing on the field, and I have to say, like, the first person I saw you guys when I ran onto the field, I was with Maria Taylor. Hi, Maria, you know, Georgia Bulldog. We were so excited. We run onto the field and the first person I see is David Pollack. And I just like run to him and like jump in his arms. I'm like, we did it! Because David is every single year. He is like such an optimist. And he's always my guy that I go, David, what are we going to do this year? What are we going to do this year? And he always gives it to me straight. And he's always so optimistic. And it was like, this was finally the year. And I'm standing there on the field and I'm watching the guys get their trophy. And I was like, I don't know this reality. Like, I don't know what it means to be on this side. Like, I was always waiting on the other shoe to drop. And it feels crazy that in 10 weeks, we went from the Braves to Georgia. Like, we are title town. And I sort of don't know what to do if our identity isn't wrapped up in losing in terrible ways.
you know what though? Here's the thing. Like, I've already had a bunch of people like, this is so awesome. This is so great. And then I have a bunch of people like, you know, how's next year's team going to be? I was like, don't care.
Who cares?
Stop me. Stop right now. I don't care. I don't give a crap. Like, I don't need a 5-year run. I don't need 2 out of the next 3. Like, I ain't the least bit concerned about any of that crap. So it just kind of shows, to prove your point, it's just like, you know, it's done. We did it. Like, it can't be. And how about like Kirby, the one to do it? Like, you know, to bring it full circle, and a guy that played there, like, he knows exactly what it means. And dude, he almost wasn't there. Like, if Mark Richt doesn't get, you know, get let go when he does, Kirby was hours away from signing with South Carolina. Not like days.
Yeah.
He was like hours away. Auburn had a chance to hire Kirby Smart back in the day. They didn't want to give him control. Didn't want to give him, you know, the full reins. Kirby said no and waited. He waited for his opportunity. By the way, he kind of did it his way. Like, everybody wanted Stetson Bennett. Everybody wanted JT Daniel. Everybody wanted, wait a minute, we got to open this thing up. We got to do it. There was nobody happier in the world than Kirby Smart when the game's 9-6. Like, him and Nick inside were quietly like, yeah, this is real football. This is how it should be done. Like, it's not the new age throwing it around. So, I mean, I just think, you know, Kirby doing it his way, you know, doing it at his alma mater, it makes it even sweeter. It's pretty cool.
there were so many of Kirby's former teammates that played with him at UGA that were at the game. And, you know, of course, we all converged in the JW Marriott, which again was just basically a hotel in Athens. And they just all kept talking about that, like how much Kirby loves Georgia and how much, even when he was playing, like just the traditions and being a Bulldog meant so much to him. And they wanted to be there for when he finally won a national championship and brought one home back to Georgia. But I love that you bring up the Stetson Bennett part, because you're right. I think that if there was one, you know, real criticism of Kirby over the last few years, it's been his decision-making at the quarterback position, right? With Jake Fromm and yep. how that happened and, you know, losing Justin Fields. And it sort of felt like, here we go again, right? Like, we know Kirby's going to put out a hell of a defense and this is his best one yet, but here we go again. The sticking point seems to be the quarterback position. Like, why can't we figure this thing out? And let's be honest, for about 2.5 quarters in the national championship, I mean, I'm in the suite next to people that are going, you know, bring JT in. Like, what are we waiting for? You know, they wanted to move on from Stetson in the actual game, and for him to stick with his guns and to stick with Stetson, and for Stetson to make, you know, 2-3 huge, huge plays in that fourth quarter to get those touchdowns. I thought it was really incredible. I thought it was a fantastic story for a guy who has been maligned and overlooked and all of those things. With that being said, David Pollack, I'm not sure, as grateful as we are to Stetson Bennett for him pulling out the best performance of his life and for being largely mistake-free, apart from that fumble, which wasn't a fumble, I don't think there's too many Georgia fans that are like signing up necessarily for like running this thing back again with Stetson next year. What do you think Georgia is dealing with in terms of this very crowded quarterback class? And like, how would you sort of approach the situation?
Well, one thing that I stated early on and I stuck by the whole season was he was the best guy for the job this year. He was Carson Beck's a highly recruited kid. Brock Vandergriff's a highly recruited kid. JT Daniels, a highly recruited kid. Stetson Bennett, we had to have his athleticism to run around, to make extra plays, to keep this offense a little bit diverse as they found itself, especially considering, remember, you know, you want to talk about injuries, like George Pickens, you know, tears his ACL. Yeah. He doesn't play basically all season long. He's your best. He's your number one wide receiver. He's your, you know, Mitch Mechie, Jameson Williams. Arian Smith is one of the fastest players in all of college football. Hurts his foot. Can't play. Burton's banged up. Darnell Washington starts the season banged up. You got all your weapons that are your best weapons, minus this absolute freak show that comes from California, Brock Bowers. It comes in, but you're hurting with all your weapons being down. So I think you needed some mobility. You needed somebody that could do that. I thought his chemistry with Brock Bowers was really, really good. Listen, that doesn't mean he's the best man for the job next year. Like, this is really one of the greatest scripts in all of college football. You got Gunner coming in, who's one of the best quarterbacks in the country. You got Vandergriff now, who's had a year to learn the system and be a little bit better. You still got Carson Beck. Like, listen, if you want to talk about talent, no, Stetson Bennett's not the most talented. But how about you need a guy that in this offense could run, but also take shots? Like, you were built on multiple tight ends running the football. Well, he was second in the nation at yards per completion because he dropped bombs and he took shots. Like, Stetson plays with a – it's funny. I hear people talk about his arm strength all the time. He plays with a massive chip on his shoulder because people have told him he can't do X, he can't do Y. And he's more inclined to chuck it than he is check it down. And so I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what this team's going to look like. I was watching the tape again yesterday just to learn and get better at my job and just learn, look at ideas with different multiple tight end sets and the way they run their offense and how I would do it, because I want to coach one day and always try to put myself in that mindset of, you know, coaching. And, you know, there's a lot of plays that could be made with this offense to make it better. But you look at Van Pran's back. Tate Ratledge will be your best guard immediately when he comes back. You've got your left tackle. Broderick Jones came in and played ridiculous in the second half when he came in for injury. The offensive line is going to be great. The tight end room is going to be one of the best in the country. Receivers, you're going to have plenty of guys. This offense is set up to succeed. But here's the difference. This offense is going to have to be better next year because it won't rely on its defense. This offense is going to have to score 10 more points a game. This offense is going to have to be more explosive. But Stetson's a guy that's got the reps. Stetson's a guy that you've built it around that knows the checks, that's done a good job. So, you know, last year, Stetson Bennett sat down with Coach before the season, one of their offensive coaches. I'm not going to say who. He sat down before that L, before camp started, sat down with Stetson and said, listen, bro, you're a fourth team guy here. You're not going to play. It's JT.
Wow.
It's JT. It's other guys that are going to be getting reps to build for the future. We love what you did. And JT felt, Stetson felt a little bit snubbed. He was like, wait a minute, I played pretty good last year when I was in there. Didn't leave, didn't transfer. Somebody gets hurt, and what did Kirby have to do? Kirby had to play the guy, not that was the most talented, the guy he trusted.
Yep.
He trusted Stetson Bennett. When you're a player out there, guys, whoever it is, no matter where you are on the depth chart, if you're always working and you're always ready and you're trusted, when coaches have to make difficult decisions, they will ride with you because their job's on the line. So I think it's really, really cool that this dude was an afterthought in camp, but coaches trusted him. That's why they inserted him when an injury happened.
Let me stop you right there. What does that mean, David? Like, what does it mean to trust someone? Like, is it like what kind of trust is there between Stetson Bennett and Kirby or a player and their coach that the coach just knows that they're going to perform regardless of talent?
Well, when you're a guy that shows up every single day and you're prepared mentally, when it's third down, you know what our plays are. When it's motion situations, you know what our motion is. When we're checking plays at the line of scrimmage, you're the guy that's going to check. By the way, another thing, too, that Stetson had way over JT, they love that dude. They love the flip phone dude, the dude that's got – like, this dude's got swag. Like, you see him in the Orange Bowl throw a touchdown, and he does the McGregor. Like, he's got something about him that people are like, oh, my gosh. Like, nobody really believes in him, but that's a dude. And you can see it as a player. You can see it as a coach when a guy walks with confidence. Carson Beck – he's just starting out. Like, I don't think he's as confident in himself and in his reads. You're going to let it go. Like he would, Stetson would let it go. Stetson would run. Stetson would take, like, he had a command of what he was doing. Now, listen, a lot of that had to do with the year before. I think he played a bunch. Like, he played in Munkin's offense. He had experience in Munkin's offense. He made plays against most everybody, just not named Alabama. So I think you saw him do some of it. But more importantly, the way he carried himself, the way he prepared, the way he was ready for every moment and every answer, and the way the guys respond to you in the huddle, the way the guys look at you with, man, there's something about that dude. Like, I'll fight for him.
I think that I love the story of Stetson because you are right. It is. And if you've, for those that are listening that sort of treetops, you know the idea of like what sort of David laid out with Stetson, but like, you know, reading articles over the years of like when he came in and he was sharing a locker with like another quarterback and he was given the number 22 and he was just so excited to even be on the scout team so he could wear a number that made him look like a quarterback and just how disrespected he felt. But it was also really, I think, significant, and I could just be making this up. I probably am, but it felt like for someone that was from there, when Stetson said after the game, I was not going to be the reason that we lost again. Stetson is not as old as I am. He's not as old as you, but he knows what it's like for Georgia. He knows what it's like for the sports fandom. And he knows that we're always waiting on the other shoe to drop. And it felt like if you're going to entrust the curse to finally be broken for this fan base, for this state, for this city against Alabama, you would want it to be someone that was from there. Like, I just feel like he was perfectly situated for that situation because he knows what this was like. And he has gone from what could have made him a Georgia pariah to a legend. Like, dude could sell insurance or whatever the hell he wants to in Georgia for the rest of his life. 10 years ago, David Pollack, I did an event for 790 and Herschel Walker was like selling his little frozen food line or something. And we were going to go to like a Publix and he was going to sign autographs. 2 hours before Herschel Walker shows up, there's a line 500 deep all the way down the street, right? And like, that's what's waiting for all of these dudes because they have finally done that thing. Herschel Walker, of course, is Herschel Walker. But it just felt really sweet. And I hope it felt for Stetson that way as well, that not only was he able to do it with all of the things stacked up against him, but to do it in a place that he's from, to be that guy that finally helped them break that barrier, I thought was fantastic. But to your point, We're back here with a team that has been decimated, if you will, as it should be. The defense is largely moving on to the NFL draft, right? And I'm just wondering for you, I'm not audacious enough, and neither are you, to assume that we're going to just keep running it back and back and back. I'm walking out of the stadium, and I hear the Alabama fans, right? And I hate them for this. But at the same time, like, this is their reality. They're walking out, and they're like, well, that sucked. But where are we going next year for the Natty? And the other one's like, oh, it's in LA. And they were like, oh, that's awesome. At least it'll be warm. And I'm like, they just assume they're going to be in the national championship next year. And the odds are that they will. I'm not audacious enough to think that we're going to win it again and again and again. But if we are going to be back in that conversation, which we will be, what needs to happen? Because I think the Nolan Smith sticking around is huge. I don't know what do you think of that, by the way? Nolan Smith deciding that he is not going to move on to the draft and instead come back for his senior year.
I think Nolan, first of all, Nolan's made of everything in his, he's got everything in his chest. He's like the definition of a stud. Like he's tough. He's physical. Like I think Nolan, watching Nolan over the years, like he could be better with his hands. He could grow and learn, and he could become a higher pick because of that. So I think he sees it as like another, he loves Georgia. I was projected to be a first round pick after my junior year. I stayed for my senior year. I love Georgia and I wanted to be a kid. And then I wanted to set some goals. And that's, you know, one thing I talked with Nolan about, set intentional goals. Like you need to get better rushing the passer with your hands. He's a great try hard guy. I would love to see him continue to improve and get better with his hands. But as far as this team's concerned, like that was a big deal. Beal coming back is a big deal. Jalen Carter's a top 10 pick in the defensive tackle. That's a big deal. The transfer portal will be a big deal for this team. Like you are going to have to fill some voids. DK last year at corner obviously comes right in. You're going to have to fill some voids. You've recruited. Now you've got guys in the secondary that have experience. They're young, but they're going to be more mature. They're going to be more ready. I expect Ringo to continue to ascend because he's got game changing speed. But here's the thing about Georgia. Look at what they've been. You know, Kirby's got a second place finish his second year. His third year, he's got a fifth place finish. His fourth year, he's got a fifth place finish. He's got, and then he's got a first place finish. Like, regardless of whether Georgia won a natty or not, you're relevant every year. You recruit at a high level, insane level. Listen to this group talk. Like, now you're going to have to find the right chemistry, and there's going to be some leaders that need to develop, and you got to find those guys that are going to lead, be vocal leaders. Because I think N'Kobe Dean was one of the best leaders I've ever seen in my life. And you saw it during the game when he had opportunities with Tyndale. Like, Tyndale messes up. He goes and grabs his face. And then the next play, Tyndale gets a sack and he goes and slaps him on the butt and shows leadership. So I think this is a team that out the gates has Oregon. Remember Dan Lanning, now the coach there.
Oh, yeah.
You win that game. You win that game, L. Now you got three or four games in a row that are pretty winnable. And just like Clemson's done the last several years, Clemson's preyed on the SEC or on the ACC that's not very good. And they develop as the season goes, highly touted kids, highly recruited kids. And by the end of the year, you got to be playing really good ball. So I think you should expect Georgia to be in the mix. You know, I don't expect them to win it. Alabama bringing back, 31-9, bringing back those two, Will Anderson and Bryce Young. They got the best two players on each side of the football and all of college football. So that's why they're going looking forward to Las Vegas. And I think that is Nick Saban still on the sidelines. I think that guy, that dude's pretty good. He's okay.
Is he okay? I heard he's decent. You know what's funny is I knew Nick Saban was effing with us when in the media days leading up to the national championship when they showed him in freezing temperatures in Indianapolis wearing a leather bomber jacket. I was like, oh, he's trolling us now. And I was so glad when we finally won. He's the first person I thought of was Nick Saban. And the second thing I thought of, David, and I'm interested in like who you initially thought of. I just thought of like I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know if I wanted to go because I'm incredibly superstitious, like incredibly superstitious. And I was at that 2003 SEC championship, right? When y'all lost to LSU. And I was there in 2005 when they lost a Sugar Bowl to West Virginia. And I was like, oh, it's me. Like, I'm the jinx. I shouldn't go. And I decided at the last minute that if we were going to win the national championship and I wasn't there, it would be something I regretted my entire life. But as we're standing there after the Ringo pick and we're sort of waiting in the waning seconds and we know that we're going to win, I just started like thinking about, I thought about you. I thought about Thomas Davis. I thought about Matt Stafford and Noshon and DJ Shockley, who I loved seeing on the field afterwards as well. I just thought about all of these teams who were so close to winning. And I just felt like this is for y'all, you know, for those of you who like your class, like the run that you had at Georgia and what you guys were able to do there, where you really made us like so relevant again, you know, like we were Georgia again and we were proud to go and spend the time to go to Athens and watch these games and tailgate all day. And I felt like it was for all of you guys. I saw George Foster there who were never able to finally secure it. Who did you think of when the clock finally hit zeros? Like, who's the first person that you thought of that you felt like this is for you?
I think all those people you named was my first thought. But my second thought was just all the people that I know that are in the stands, like my buddy Drew Pilgrim, who Claxton Pilgrim's there, his son, Adriana, his daughter's there, like, and his mom was there, but like all the people I know, Phil Nichols, all the people I know that they're generations of dad. Their dad passed it to them. They passed it to their kids. Like the generations of tailgaters, like all the fans. And and I'm telling you, when they were crying, I was just like, oh my God, like this is, it's just crazy to think about. So it was all my buddies. It was all my friends. It was all my family members that I know that have not, they've just, this hasn't been just kind of like a, you know, it's a kind of a cool thing we follow. This is a thing where they're going to all the games. Like they're going with their granddad, with their dad, with their kids. Like that's what's crazy. They tailgate the same spot for the last 20 years. They RV to every game. Like
yes.
I think the players, you know, Coach Rick for me is a guy that I thought of and what he's going through, and to have him there. Like I have Coach he's in my Bible study group too on Wednesdays. And you know, you see the pride in Vince Dooley on the field, like all these guys, like all of it. I had somebody say to me like, hey, do you look at these facilities and be like, man, like we got the shaft. Cause like some people would say like, good Lord, like look what they got. And I'm like, no, because we had it better than the people before us and they had it better than the people before us. Mm-hmm. But it's a lineage of that, that culminates with a guy that had it worse than I had it with Kirby before me. That takes it and makes it better. So it was just a full circle, a lot of friends, family, teammates, coaches that all get to enjoy it and say, we're number one.
I think it's so hard to explain to people. It's funny because of course I've been on like full troll alert. Like you can't see my sign here because it's backward, but it says Troll Tide, which has been like my life for the last week. But you know, their rebuttal to me is like, did you even go to Georgia? And I'm like, no, I got waitlisted at Georgia. But what I can't get people to understand, like, is when you're from the South and specifically when you're from a place like Georgia, where football is life, Georgia belongs to all of us. Like there are many other conferences and schools where you go to that school and that's where your fandom is formed, right? Because you went there, but that's not how it works in Georgia. Everyone is a Georgia, unless you went to Georgia Tech, like went to Georgia Tech, you are a Georgia fan, period. That's who you root for. And those are your teams. And in particular, college football is life in the SEC. So to your point, like growing up and going to these tailgates and, you know, picking out what red dress I would wear, because we don't wear jerseys and t-shirts. We dress up for tailgates. Just thinking about like all of those sad tears that we cried and all the great moments too, right? Like let's not also revisit history and make it out to be like it was only sadness that happened with the Georgia football program. There was so much winning. And that's the point, is there was so much winning. And so many times we felt like we missed that opportunity, but it means more. And I hate stealing from the SEC, you know, expression, but it does mean more to people from Georgia. So this was for all of us, whether you ever attended the University of Georgia or not, or got your degree from there. We take ownership of that team. And it just felt like it was a long time coming. And I'm just really glad that I got the opportunity to see you on the field. It's so crazy how life works, because like I said, like I used to watch you play in college and I have always followed your career after what happened in the NFL. And then you working at the 790 The Zone, now, of course, becoming a big TV star, but it felt like it was for everyone. So I was grateful to be there, humbled to be there and grateful to have seen you as well, David. And I don't care about next year, because for the next, 7 months or so, we are the national champions and no one can take that away from us. And it has been a hell of a ride. Let's go, David.
Yeah, and you keep up your trolling, because it's amazing.
Oh my God. It's never going to stop. I'm the number one troll of all time. And I am totally okay with that. Quickly, David, everybody's sort of moving into the off season. College football is officially over, but now you're heading into your second and third, you've got like 50 jobs. What's the job that you are preparing for right now? When you get off this podcast, you'll be doing what?
What I was doing right before we got on was I'm studying sixth grade girls basketball right now. Like my daughter's got a bunch of savages at North Oconee, and I'm watching the playoffs start soon. So I'm studying we film every game and we've already played everybody. So now I'm studying all of our opponents and writing down what they do and how we can attack them. So we make sure that we go get another trophy. We win a lot of more trophies at North Oconee than we have at Georgia. So we're kind of used to it. But it doesn't make it any less sweet. We grind. My baby girl loves some hoops, and she's got some friends that are really good. So I literally will be on the iPad the next couple hours watching some girls basketball. Sixth grade.
I love that. It's such a gauntlet, David. The college football season is such a gauntlet for you. And, you know, you're a TV star. You're all over the place. What is that like? Like coming down from not only the season ending, but also like knowing that you get to spend some time with your family. What is sort of this time in the next few months look like for David Pollack and the Pollack House?
Well, this is why I do what I do. I don't coach yet because I'm going to raise my kids. And I say yet because I will coach at some point. It's just a matter of when. But I just love being busy. Just like, and listen, it's sweeter when you come home when you're busy a lot. But I'm busy just for the fall. And then I get to come home and be dad. I don't do anything. So I literally get to coach. I coach my daughter in basketball and in softball over the next, you know, several months. And I coach my son in basketball. I've been coaching in basketball. Now I can actually be there more for basketball. And then we go straight into baseball with him. So, you know, it's fun because you got a busy season. And listen, my son was on the sidelines with me during the game. Like, I take him with me, you know, almost every other weekend to the different venues and different events. And it's a family affair. And my daughter goes a bunch and she'll bring girlfriends. And it's really, really fun, but it's really fun because, you know, I can grind and then I have a season of where I get to now pour into them every day, be home every day, take, you know, make them breakfast, you know, do all the things around the house that we get to do together. That's really fun. So busy and then really calm.
It's a beautiful thing. It really is one of the benefits to doing what we do. There is certainly crosses to bear, right? And it is tough to leave your family a lot, but having an entire, like, you know, season, if you will, to be able to really focus on your family. And I agree with you. For those that are listening that are feeling any kind of guilt about working a ton, I personally think it makes you a better parent when you go, when you do your thing, and you set that example for your kids that hard work is important. And when you are home, you are truly home. And so I will let you be home and go be with your family and break down your film, David Pollack. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for letting me take over your podcast. Shout out to Kevin Negandhi and Herbie and Reese and Matt Berry for letting me take over. I appreciate you guys for the whole season. And I love you, David Pollack. And I feel like this is the first year I don't have to look at you at the beginning of the year and go, God, David, what are we going to do this year, David? Is this finally going to be it, David? Every year. Is this it, David? Because this was the year. Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
All right, David, I love you. Okay. I love you so much. And I loved watching you play when you were at Georgia, but I want to bring somebody in right now who is a current national champion, the Butkus Award winner for the best linebacker in the country. N'Kobe Dean is in the building. N'Kobe Dean. Hey man, you're a national champion. Like, I see the smile on your face right now. Has that gotten old in the last 13 days and some change?
Not at all.
the pride of Horn Lake, Mississippi, and a national champion. Like, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. You know, I would say I kind of came down off that, you know, off that high from the national wins, just because I got other stuff to worry about now and business to take care of. But it was definitely great to be just a part of that, you know, winning with my team, winning for the state, for the school, for the fans, you know, 41 years in the making.
I love that you mentioned like winning for the school, for the state, for the fans and the 41 years, because you are from Mississippi. And right. Me and David have been talking this whole time. We're both born and raised in Georgia. And so we know and have known our whole lives this like alleged Georgia curse. I'm interested, like, what you knew coming into Georgia about this supposed curse that followed every Georgia sports team.
And they, man, I'm not a big superstitious person. You know, I didn't never believe in no curse. You know, I was like, they say, you know, Georgia got a curse, this man. I'm like, well, it ain't gonna be there where I'm there. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of was my, you know, my motivation towards it. You know, and I mean, you know, the Braves won the World Series. I was like, it's our turn now. We got to bring a national championship home.
That's so funny that you bring that up, because after the Braves won, instantly everyone was like, oh, Georgia is next. Now, your historic defense is probably why we had the confidence to say that. But that was also something that you guys talked about as well in the locker room.
I mean, of course, it wasn't like, okay, Braves going to get the World Series and then us. It was more so like, we going to win the national championship and the Braves might win the World Series. But it's just because, my Georgia teammates, they all, you know, they Braves fans, they Bulldog fans while they on the team. They always was like, man, I don't know. I can't put my 100% trust in a Georgia team. And I'm like, why not? Like, y'all gotta come on. So they definitely die hard, but they always was like, they had this thing where they didn't want to put themselves all into it. They just didn't want to get hurt. That's what they say.
Yes. Like, and that's the thing, Nakobe, is that, like, I don't know, obviously you had bigger fish to fry when you guys were on the field celebrating your national championship, but me and Pollock were talking about this. Like, it was just this idea that everything always went poorly for us. And that's from the Braves to Georgia, to the Falcons, to the Hawks. Like, it never goes our way. The balls never bounce our way. Like, it feels like we always find ways to, you know, snatch victory or snatch defeat out of the jaws of victory. And it didn't happen. Like, for the first time in many, many 41 years, it didn't happen. And the balls bounced our way. And I think there was just this, like, we're all looking at each other. I was at Lucas Oil. I was down on the field too. You know, I wasn't going to be denied. And I'm looking around at these Georgia fans that are just bawling and crying because they can't believe that we have finally done it. Did you feel that in that building that night, that there had been some demons finally exercised?
So, you know, I didn't, like, you know, I'm celebrating. We won the Natty and everything. And I took kind of like after Keely caught the pick. I don't know if I can find the video or anything, but I kind of like, I would tell him to get down like Coach Mark. But I didn't run down the field to block a dance. And when he scored a touchdown, I kind of like looked to the sideline. I mean, I looked in the crowd a little bit and I just see people like celebrating, just started to ball. And it was like, man, this really meant a lot to a lot of people out there, you know. It meant a lot to me, of course, because I'm on the team. And that's why I came to Georgia and winning Natty. So I didn't know the effect until like, the effect that I had until after we won it, and I see the effect it had on the fans and at the parade and everything, you know, how much support and everything we had. So that was great.
Because that's the thing about Georgia football is, like, in many other places, like, your fandom is built around you going to that school, right? But in Georgia, it has nothing to do with whether you went to UGA or not. Like, if you didn't go to Georgia Tech and you're from Georgia, you're a UGA football fan. Like, you're a dog, and that's how it works. So it was just incredible to see that. I want to go back, though, to sort of your journey, because you were heralded from the beginning, right? Like, a huge recruit. You were a star in high school. You were a star with huge expectations lumped on you when you came to UGA. And you're the rare situation where you lived up to and exceeded already all of those lofty expectations that were laid upon you. When you sort of look back at your journey at Georgia, what will you remember the most?
Man, a lot of long nights. Of schoolwork. A lot of long nights of schoolwork, you know. So, yeah, coming from where I came from, it was the only thing I just knew was to work hard, you know. I personally feel like I never was given anything. I don't feel like I was given the benefit of the doubt, you know, definitely when it came to sports or just being smart, you know, trying to make good grades. So it was always work, you know. No matter what you did in the past, you know, it's always, what have you done for me lately? You know, it was always, that's kind of how I always thought about it. So wherever I go, I always just kind of put my head down to work and until I come up, you know, so that's just kind of how it was.
I love the idea that I ask you about your legacy at Georgia. And despite the fact that you will go down as one of the greatest linebackers to ever play there, you talked about the schoolwork aspect of that. And from what I understand, that's because mama and daddy made sure that as good as you were at football, you were also as good at hitting the books. Like, what was that like, trying to measure being a 5-star athlete with also making sure that you were meeting all your duties in the classroom?
Yeah. So growing up, my mama just pushed schoolwork. It was schoolwork. We didn't have any like D1 athletes in my family, like at all. Like nobody went to college to play ball. So it was never a thing. Like my mom looked at me and was like, oh, you're gonna be the next great football player. And me personally, I didn't look at myself like that either. I used to grow up saying I want to be a doctor, build this, I want to design this. And then it was like, it wasn't until I really got to high school and I used to start playing, and I was like, I don't want my mom to pay for my college. I was like, I can get a sports scholarship. And it just kind of like rolled after that. It was just so kind of the work I put in the classroom was, I knew it had to be just as hard as the work I put in on the field to be successful at both. And, you know, it kind of carried on to college. Of course, it was way harder in college. I'm doing engineering and everything, but it was, you know, I'm going to come back and get that degree. It's been a lot. I put a lot of work in for that. I'm definitely going to come back and grab it.
I love that you brought that up, because, of course, anyone that's listening to this podcast knows for sure that you did what we all assumed that you would do, and you declared for the NFL draft. So you will be leaving school and you're headed to the draft. And we'll talk about your already high projections from Mel Kiper Jr. But I love that you say that. So you do, you, because you're a, are you a mechanical engineering major right now? Now, how the hell are you going to figure out how to do that and also dominate on Sundays, N'Kobe? Where is that going to work?
It was well, right now, you know, I took a break from, you know, I'm not doing it. It's one of them things, like I'm about to come back and finish. But in college, it wasn't easy at all. It was a lot of long nights, a lot of give and takes, you know, sacrifice some sleep time for a little homework or performance on the field. And, you know, it took me, you know, the first year, you kind of you go in trying to figure it out. When I was just figuring it out, COVID hit, and now it's like, I got to teach myself. I'm not in the class with a group of us doing hands-on material. I'm teaching myself. I'm in my dorm room at 8 o'clock in the morning trying to log in on Zoom. Junior was finally when I was able to find that great balance of me going back into the classroom and everything, and being able to, the great balance that I needed to be successful on and off the field.
You say that no one in your family was ever a D1 athlete. So then I imagine no one in your family was ever a professional athlete. And in the latest mock drafts, Mel Kiper has you going number 9, your top 10 pick going number 9 to the Broncos. What is your family making of all of this? Like, not only did you turn your D1 career into a national championship, but now you're going to be a featured person in the NFL draft in April. Like, what are they saying about this?
My immediate family just my mom, my pops, my brother, and them. They kind of like they gonna go out how I go. So maybe in secrecy, they probably, I don't know what they saying, but they know it's like me. I look at it and I say, okay, but I gotta work. You know, I mean, it ain't happened yet. You know, so it's like only thing I'm thinking about is working, because it's been a lot of time, like all them preseason boys, just like in college, all them preseason All-American boys come up, and it's like, how many of them, you know, come through for fruition, right?
Sure. So,
like, the work got to get put in, you know, you got to perform, things like that. So that's the only thing I'm thinking about, putting my head down and just work.
I'm sure that there, like, any prospective like scout or coach that's listening to that is loving that, because it feels like your resume speaks for itself. Like, the proof is in the tape. You did win the Buckus Award. You have been the best linebacker in the country all season long. And of course, then you secure and feature prominently in the national championship. But you still think that there's work to do. What do you think there is still left to prove to these teams?
Definitely. I wouldn't even say the team. I would say myself. You know, it's definitely me versus me right now, you know. I kind of strive to be the greatest version of myself all the time. So I feel like if I can know that I'm striving to be the best version of myself, the greatest version of myself, you know, I can't be, you know, mad at myself. I can't think that I left something out on the table or something else could have gave. I could have did something else, because I know that I'm striving and I'm working to be the best version. So it's more so me versus me.
I love that. You define your measure of success. And I mentioned, like, again, it's been a really successful run for you, and you've been heralded since your time in high school. on the opposite end of that spectrum is your now former quarterback, Stetson Bennett, who announced this week that he would be coming back to Georgia for his final year of eligibility. And like, listen, we don't have to rehash his story. Everyone knows it is the ultimate movie, Lifetime Movie Network story, what he went through, what he overcame, the adversity and all of those things. But like, when you think about what Stetson Bennett was able to do, how do you think that sets Georgia up next year?
I know they're going to have a hard work as a leader, you know, I love anybody who works hard, you know, just from the aspect of and just staying persistent in it, you know, and having a great mindset and attitude towards it, you know, this, you know, and, you know, his story speaks for itself, you know, everything he went through and people possibly not believing in him. And, mm-hmm. But, you know, we had utmost belief in Stetson, utmost in belief in whoever the coaches decided to put it up there, quarterback, that he could get the job done. So, you know, I feel like next year everybody just got to buy in, you know, and just, you know, make it player-led team, you know, lead. Let them be the ones telling everybody, come on, let's pick it up instead of the coaches.
I want to ask you that before I let you get out of here, because I know, again, you're so busy and preparing for like the next phase of your entire life. But what would you say to the Georgia sports fans, the UGA dog fans who are seeing that historic defense one by one declare for the draft? What would you say to them based on what you know about who's going to be left next year, about their future and about the chances that they could compete at the Natty again next year?
I'll say believe in them. You know, yeah. Have hope. You know, it's the we done won in Natty now, so it's like it's not like y'all just don't have no belief in that, you know, no more. So, but I say believe in them and, you know, trust. You know, it's definitely a long time for the next season start, and I just know they're gonna be working and doing everything in their power to win another Natty, not just win or be selfish for themselves.
I love that. And finally, you know, I'm not going to let you get out of here because, again, you have had such a storied career and you win the Butkus Award and you win the national championship. And then like at the peak of your college football experience, someone hands you a championship hat and that says Alabama on it. N'Kobe, what were you thinking? The face says it all because you were, of course, all over SportsCenter. But what were you thinking when you looked down and you realized, oh, this is Alabama on it?
Man, okay. So the story was so afterwards they was grabbing me for like the post game interview on the field. But, you know, I'm trying to celebrate, so you know they grabbing me, make sure I don't go too far, and I'm kind of like snatching away, like I'm trying to go celebrate with the guys. So I'm like, okay, just stay with me. So and I'm like, could you grab me a hat? And you know, could you grab me a hat if I got a beard? So I kind of turned around, and he had the hat. He had a hat, so he was like, "Yeah, I got your hat." So I'm like, "Cool, let me put it on for the interview." And that was that. It was like the woman was like, "You got the wrong hat," and I was like,
"That's the face."
That's the face. Yeah, I was like, "What?" And it was like at first I just dropped it on the ground. And I was like, "No, I'm gonna keep that. I need it."
Oh, you kept it.
I mean, I got it.
You know, that thing might be worth a lot of money on eBay one day because most of those get shipped over to other countries, right? We never see those things again.
Right, you're right. So it was funny. You know, a lot of people tried to get on me about that, but, you know, I made fun out of it because, you know, I'm a national champion. I don't care. The ring not going to be having the wrong thing.
Hello.
Exactly. So hello. I didn't care at all.
It was funny. It was like a lot of levity and a funny moment for, again, someone who had experienced, like, how about the humility of that? You're on top of the world and they're like, oh, here's the wrong hat. And also it's adorning your biggest rival's name on it. Life be like that sometimes.
Yeah, it was definitely funny.
Well, N'Kobe, good luck. Like you are forever a dog. You are forever a legacy. One day, 30 years from now, when you're done playing in the NFL, you could do anything you want in the state of Georgia because you will forever be loved and adored in Georgia. Thank you for all of your work. And most importantly, N'Kobe, the thing about you is, and I'm sure you've heard this time and time again, anybody, your reputation precedes you. And anytime someone talks about you, David Pollack on this very podcast said he's never seen a better leader. He said that. And that's David Pollack, right? Like, who is one of those poster children for leadership. And he was like, I've never seen a leader quite like N'Kobe Dean. And I think that the legacy that you've left behind and all the work that you put in, it will live far beyond your national championship days when you're playing on Sundays and competing for the Lombardi. So thank you for your contributions and ending this damn curse. Thank you for coming to us from Mississippi and good luck in your future, N'Kobe.
Thank you. Thank y'all for having me.
Go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.
I think that does it. I think that we have done enough Georgia propaganda, at least for now, because the beauty is that now that we're officially in the off season, as you know, we're going to have rotating hosts and guests and analysts throughout the entire off season. So it'll be a ton of fun. Keep an eye on this feed. If you haven't already, make sure to follow the ESPN College Football Podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. All right, that's going to do it for this week's CFB podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to David Pollack. Thank you to the heart of that Georgia defense, the national champion and soon-to-be linebacker playing on Sundays, N'Kobe Dean. We will see you next week.